Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. This week's special guest will join us a bit later. But first up is another great discussion on Coach's Corner. So let's introduce tonight's Coach's Corner panel.
All right, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and despite what the intro said, we are not going to have a Coach's Corner tonight. Didn't have time to edit that out, so my apologies. I've given the panel the evening off, and I'm actually very excited to actually welcome three special guests this evening to the show, two here in just a moment, and then a little bit later on, I've got a reschedule from last week. So let me introduce the guys that are coming on first. We're going to be speaking with Adam Geisler. He is the co-founder and CEO of Youth Athletics United, as well as TGM Premier Sports. And joining him is also Dave Robinson, who is an owner and a chapter director at TGA Premier Sports and TGA Golf. So, gentlemen, welcome to Golf Talk Live.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you, guys. And let me just say my apologies. I know you guys, I believe, were scheduled back in July, if I'm not mistaken. I think you were actually scheduled before, and then we had to make some changes. And then you guys were scheduled, I believe it was in July. It might have been August. I'm not sure now off the top of my head. And I ended up coming down with a bug and had to actually cancel pretty much last minute. So I apologize for that. But your guys are here now, and we're going to jump right into things. So, Adam, I'm going to start with you, if you don't mind, and then, Dave, I'll bring you in as well. One of the things that I want to talk about is, Adam, is you've had a goal for a while of really creating a large youth sports franchise platform. You're obviously involved and one of the creators of the other organization
Youth
that
Athletes
I mentioned.
Youth Athletes United, yep.
Yes, thank you.
I'm having
a brain cramp this morning. And then obviously now TGA Premier Sport. So give us an idea first how you got involved in that, because your background is actually a little bit different. When I look at some of the notes here and that, you've actually been around sports, but you were also in lifestyle and brands and so forth, which you developed Everlast, and then also another one called Mission, which was very, very, and has been very, very successful in merchandising and so forth. So what prompted you to first be co-found Youth Athletics United? Talk about that first, and then how TGA Premier Sports sort of came into the fold.
Yeah, listen, I appreciate it. And thank you for having both Dave and I to tell our story. I mean, you know, for us, we kind of operate every day of how do we positively impact kids through sports. And that's kind of, you know, that's in our DNA every single day. And so for me, you know, I've been in various roles throughout my life. I've fortunately been very successful in many of them. But I've been in the sporting goods world for probably 20 plus years with various brands and companies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me personally, I always had a passion. I was very passionate about business and impacting. You know, I always say I'm very commercial, and I wanted to tie that to also having a social impact. And so for me, I always grew up in sports. I grew up in Texas where, you know, you're playing sports right out of the womb. But what I never had is nobody ever taught me the fun, how to have fun with sports and also the basic fundamentals of sports. You know, everything was so serious. And you just kind of got thrown out into the mix, right? And you're thrown on the football field, the basketball court, the soccer field, and you kind of have to learn your way through it. And it forces you, if you are not as talented or maybe don't have the same upbringing or resources, to kind of lose out. You know, you lose it on the special moments or even that confidence to really unleash that inner athlete. And so we had this vision of what if we could, you know, grow the game of golf, tennis, sports, soccer, you know, all these different, these great, great sports that we all grow up on it, but do it at the beginning. Let's be the first sport experience. And I say to people all the time when we talk about it, you know, that's what we want to be, that first sport experience. And it's a big opportunity and a big responsibility. If we are your first golf class, your first golf experience, and it's not good, it's not fun, you may not want to play golf again, certainly at those ages.
Right.
But if it is, if you're in Dave Robinson's class in Detroit and you are having a great experience, which all of them are, that we've got that kid. And the impact that you can have on those kids, and Dave will tell much better stories than I as kind of a franchise owner for all these years, of watching these kids grow from 6 and 7 just from learning how to hold a club and swing a club in
right.
a gymnasium, not on a golf course, right? How do we give those basic fundamentals? And when you do that for a kid, you're giving them such amazing confidence, and you're also teaching them life skills. And we talk about that, right? How do we give them that confidence and that physical literacy and the ability to understand that if you teach these basic fundamentals, anybody can play, and that's what we really love about golf. Anybody can play golf, right? There's no limiter.
Yeah.
But to have the confidence and feel really good about yourself, that's what really, really important. But we also talk about these life skills, and Dave will talk about it really, really well in terms of its application. But, you know, golf has this great, have these great, you know, rules and etiquette about it. And so it's really interesting to see and teach these kids all those basic fundamentals of how to listen, how to be respectful, how to be a partner on the course, and all those different things. And they really translate into life. And so if we can take that, do that in golf, do that in soccer, and do it in tennis, and do it in these other sports, man, you know, we certainly, there certainly could be a financial reward at the end of it, but who cares? The social impact. We want to impact 1 million kids a year through our platform. We're at about 250 today, and we feel great about it, but we want to get to 1 million kids impacted through our businesses. And if we can do that, we'll teach you the fundamentals and really give these kids that confidence and that life skills and use golf as one of our primary platforms. What an opportunity. And you know, you wake up every day and you don't have a job anymore, right? You just have
right.
a lifestyle. And that's what I wanted. And that's what, you know, a lot of the partners that I work with Dave and a lot of other franchisees, that's what we all want. And we love what we do.
Yeah, and you raise such a great point. You know, I've been in golf pretty much all my life, but I've been a teacher professional for probably pushing 30 years now. And, you know, I love doing what I do. And obviously now I'm more into the media side of things with a lot of different projects. And I also happen to own, over the last couple of years, picked up Golf Tips Magazine. So now I'm also into the publishing a little bit as well. So I've got my prongs in there. But you raise a very valid point, and I want to just touch on something real quick, and then, Dave, I'm going to bring you into the conversation as well, is, you know, you're right in the sense that I think that what, if anything, out of this last couple of years through this pandemic, a lot of people have really come out into golf that had never been there before, didn't go through junior golf programs, what have you, and they were just looking for something to have fun. And I think that's something that had been lost for a long time, and that's why I really appreciate what it is that you guys do. And so I think that, you know, if we can make it fun and start early as well, you know, there's so many, as you mentioned, some of the other sports, they begin very, very early in a lot of programs in school and so forth. But golf was something, unless you were sort of born into a family that played golf or really showed an aptitude for it and got into some sort of a junior program, you really weren't exposed to it, much like some of the other sports that you mentioned. So I think it's really important that if we can get them young and show them how much fun it can be, you know, sky's the limit. And whether they ever play on the PGA or the LPGA Tour is really irrelevant, as long as they're going out there and having a good time. And Dave, I want to come to you because your story is kind of interesting in its own right. You know, you were for 32-plus years – you were a newspaper editor, including 22 at the Detroit Free Press. So that's kind of a little bit different application, if you will, from what you're doing now. So how did you go from an editor with obviously major newspapers to coming to do what you're doing now?
Well, it was what happened was, I mean, I figured I was going to be a newspaper editor all my life. And in 2007, actually what happened in 2005, I was working for the Detroit Free Press, and which was a Knight Ridder newspaper, and I had a great career with Knight Ridder. I first worked for the Miami Herald and had some great bosses. And in 2005, we were sold to Gannett, a different company. And I stayed for 2 years. It was still, I said, same job, same salary, but it wasn't quite the same. And at the time, the newspaper industry is kind of falling apart, at least the print part of the business.
Right.
And they announced a buyout program where, you know, you get a year of pay and a year of health care. And I was one of the people who was supposed to kind of manage this program and figure out how we were going to reduce staff. And I kind of stunned everybody by taking the buyout myself. I kind of thought, okay, my son has already graduated from college. My daughter was a junior in college. And I said, my costs are going way down. I'm going to do this. So I took a buyout and started exploring new careers. And I decided to look at some golf jobs. I've always been a passionate golfer. I started playing when I was about 10, played on my high school team. I even played on my freshman team in college. I was not good enough to play a varsity team in college. But I was always very passionate about it. I wrote about golf early in my career and coordinated coverage of the Ryder Cup in 2004 at Oakland Hills when I was at the Free Press. So I've always loved golf, and I've always loved working with kids. I coached my kids' Little League baseball teams and had been a coach, you know, even as a summer job in high school and college. So as I was looking for things, at first I found PGA, and I first thought, I can't have a job with no salary and no benefits. But as I started looking around, I said, well, no, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to run my own business. I want to be an entrepreneur. And so I purchased a TGA franchise, you know, about 6 months after I took the buyout in the middle of 2008 and started golf programs in Metro Detroit. And it started off pretty small, but it was just in Macomb County in the Grosse Pointe. And then very quickly I ended up purchasing Oakland County from a previous owner. And then a couple of years later, I acquired Wayne County. So I now have the entire Detroit metro area. And it's grown quite a bit. I mean, this year we're going to have about 3,700 kids in our various programs. We had our best camps ever. We had 1,174 summer campers, but then we also have after school enrichment programs in the fall, winter, and spring. And that's a lot of kids. And then we have fall and spring leagues for our more advanced kids, and we have parent-child events and some summer tournaments. So we're a year-round program, both indoors and outdoors, and still not quite through the year, but it'll be, it looks like, about 3,700 kids.
Well, that's fantastic. And I want to ask you something, because you mentioned, you know, obviously after school and that, you know, it seemed like for a number of years, you know, a lot of our after-school programs, even school-based programs, seem to sort of fall by the wayside. And a lot of kids were really yearning for something to do. Did you notice that sort of TGA and your involvement, Dave, and I'm sticking with you for a second, that this really has helped fill a void in your area and your communities? Because a lot of other programs – now, you know, Michigan's obviously a big state. There's a lot of football and other things going on that. But for a lot of the after-school programs, kids were really kind of wavering. I've noticed in other areas of the United States as well, and even in Canada, really yearning for something. Did you notice that when you became involved that kids were just really looking for something to be a part of? Because this is, as a kid, you know, when we were growing up, you know, we wanted that type of activity, some sort of sports to get out there and have fun and you know, sort of commiserate with our peers and so forth. Was that something that you noticed early on?
Well, certainly early on. I mean, there was obviously some interest in it. Some people are skeptical of how do you play golf in a gym, but it's
right.
Actually a great way to introduce kids to the game, because we use these AstroTurf hitting mats, and we have almost golf balls that are rubber that don't break things, but we do use real clubs. But as you know, golf can be a very frustrating game. But in a gym,
yes.
You know, you get the ball in the air, you make some contact, you build some confidence, and, you know, and but it did take a while for us to build the number of kids per class. So there was interest,
sure.
But obviously you got to work hard at, you know, each one of these programs, you're really marketing just to a specific school. But actually the pandemic, clearly, you know, we lost about 1,000 kids in spring of 2020, where all the programs had to be canceled. And then we came back, you know, a little bit in the fall of 2020 and then the winter of 2021. But as we started, as more schools started getting enrichment programs back, the demand has been incredible. I mean, you know, it's still, we probably don't have quite as many schools as we did in 2019 before the pandemic,
right.
But we have more kids per class and tons of people on wait lists. And I think, you know, there was such a surge in popularity because golf always had social distancing and was safe and was outdoors.
Right.
And we also started after COVID more outdoor programs, at least in the fall and spring. In the winter, we can't do that here, as you know. But there has been a real surge of interest, I think, especially since the pandemic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And we obviously in the golf industry in general noticed a huge uptick. I mean, probably 30 to 40%. And especially in the young female category, a lot of young girls really seem to gravitate to golf. In fact, that's one of the largest growing demographics in the golf industry right now is young female players wanting to come in and learn the game. Adam, I'm going to come back to you. You know, as I mentioned, you obviously began with Youth Athletics United. What was it about the TGA model that really appealed to you? And we're going to get into some specifics in a moment, but just generally, what was it about their particular model that really appealed to you?
Yeah, and so you know, at Youth Athletes United, kind of our biggest thing is we really focused on all the brands that we own are class-based, curriculum-based, right? So everything is 30-minute sessions, 45-minute sessions, 60-minute sessions, and they're really about age and stage appropriate. And so, you know, as you go through, you look at TGA, both on the tennis and the golf side, specifically on the golf side, though, and you talk about even those 3,700 kids that Dave was mentioning. I mean, man, that's a lot of kids at a really young age who are learning the fundamentals of golf, right? And so we know it's easier to teach good habits than to change bad habits, right? So if we can get them really early on and just enjoying golf for what it really is, right? To your point, Dave and I don't care if we create golf champions or tour players or whatever, although he's got a couple that I think we'll get there, which he'll tell you about. But we really care about our impact. And so when he can look around, having done this for the number of years, and see and watch kids grown up, who some of them are even coaches at his classes. I mean, if it were students who are now coaches, there's classes teaching others. It's just we want to be a part of those businesses that we always talk about, this athlete pathway, right? And how can we really influence it? And so many people, I think specifically on the business side, will go at the highest economic bracket of things, right? Travel clubs and all these really high areas of influence, whether it's soccer, lacrosse, and baseball, and some of these other areas where parents are spending a lot of money to get those kids into the best teams. And by the way, if you're not in those teams, you can't even try out for your high school teams. And TGA just isn't about any of those things, right? We just care about if we're growing the game from the bottom up, that's really the most important influence. So it resonated with everything we've been doing for the last 4.5, 5 years. So it fit in really well. And also, you know, a lot of the brands or businesses that we own, Super Soccer Stars, Amazing Athletes, they tend to start at the younger ages, 2 through 6, and where that first sport experience.
Right.
And TGA almost picks up where we leave off, you know, and there's this big concept I just want to talk about for 2 more seconds. There's unintentional play and intentional play. Unintentional play, and this great, great book and blog about the sports gene. But it's really about them just having fun, right? We're learning the fundamentals and giving exposure for kids to try so many different things. And then it's really at that 6 or 7 age where you want intentional play. You want to expose your child to so many different sports that at 6 or 7, they're making that decision on their own to say, this is mine. This is something I want to do. And TGA gives them that opportunity to say, okay, I've tried other things, or maybe, you know, golf is something that attracts me. I've made that decision now to try golf, and I want to make this mine. And whether that becomes something I do in high school or beyond, or just being able to do it with my family. I mean, the parent-child tournaments that Dave and our franchisees do is unbelievable. But I just know I didn't have that at my age. I didn't really play golf until college. I kind of picked it up, and I messed around. And next thing I know, you know, after college, like, I'm playing golf with my dad and my brother. And I'm like, well, why wasn't I doing this at a younger age? And TGA gives us those opportunities, TGA Junior Golf. And that's – I mean, we love that.
Yeah, and again, you raise another great point. I have a very good friend of mine in the golf business, and he actually did in one of the schools in his area, and he did a speaking engagement. And what the really sad part was is he talked to them about golf and asked them a question, you know, how many of you, you know, play or have ever played? And there was roughly about 100 students, and virtually no one raised their hand. Because not because they didn't want to, but they weren't really exposed to it. And what I really like about TGA is you guys are really focusing on, again, at that very early stage, sort of providing the introductory and recreational golf. And the other thing, too, which has always been sort of the nemesis of my industry, meaning the golf industry, is it was always limited to golf courses and obviously, you know, country clubs and things like that. But you guys actually have gotten right into the school systems. You're playing at, you know, using the parks and the recreation facilities and so forth. And what's what's also interesting is the expansion that's happened. And I'm going to get you in on this as well, Dave. But Adam, I want to stick with you just for a second. Talk about that, the importance of really meeting them where they're at instead of forcing them. I mean, obviously, at some point later in their life, and I'm talking about the folks that you're working with, the youngsters, hopefully they're going to, as you have, Adam, sort of take up golf and maybe pursue it in whatever fashion they decide. But how important is it to sort of meet them where they're at? Because typically a lot of kids don't get access to a country club or even a golf course in many cases. So how important is that TGA model really to sort of spark that that beginning introductory interest?
Well, it's beyond. And so, you know, we say in our business, you know, if you're not within 15 minutes of the consumer, it impacts your enrollment tremendously, right? So if we're running a class and Dave's running at a Parks and Rec, and he's got a 15-mile radius where he can really pick up consumers, right? And so if you think about that and then you distill it down to the school, well, they're there. And so I don't have to worry about, you know, whether my parent can take me or not take me or decided, you know, to do the drop-off or pick-up, you know, at a golf course. I'm at school, and so now I have access to learning golf and in gymnasium. It doesn't even make sense to me. How can I do that? And when you really start going through, again, the gasp and the grip and the stance and the hot dog and about all the different things that we do, which is really, really fun, to your point, we're meeting them where they are, and so we're not giving them – we're eliminating a lot of roadblocks and excuses, and for the most part, we're getting access to kids that we wouldn't normally get. An impact because that we wouldn't normally get. So I think the genius of, you know, what the founder Josh Jacobs really came up with and all these great franchisees in developing it is exactly what you said. Meet them where they are physically, and then the curriculum meets them where they are mentally. You know, because you get a smattering of kids. You know, some kids are just doing it because it's an hour that they're there and they don't have to go home. But once they hit that ball, once they get that feeling and they get that bounce and that swing, you might get them hooked. And again, Dave has many more testaments to how he's seen it happen over the years, but it's awesome to watch. It's awesome to watch. And so meeting where they are is everything.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So, Dave, I'm going to get you to step in now. Talk about some of the programs that you're utilizing in your chapter. Obviously, you're following a model that TGA has sort of put forth, and you mentioned Adam Joshua, who I've actually interviewed on the program a number of times, who, of course, was the founder of TGA Premier Sports. But Dave, talk about some of the things. I mean, you know, they offer, you know, golf enrichment programs. Maybe touch a little bit on that, basically what goes on there for people that are listening to the show that maybe their kids are not involved currently in that, and then Adam, I'm going to come back to you for some follow-up questions as well. But Dave, maybe you could just touch on this, some of the different programs that you're currently offering.
So our enrichment programs, most of them are right after school on the school campus. And as Adam said, it's ideal for parents because, you know, if school ends at 3:35, the class will start at 3:40 and the parents will pick them up at 4:40, so the parents get an extra hour, and the kids are right there. And we will do these programs either in the school gym or on a school field. And we'll typically have a sold-out class would be 18 kids, and we'll have three instructors, a lead instructor who's an adult, and two assistant coaches, often high school students, but also the assistants could be adults or retired people too. But we do employ a lot of high school golfers, both boys and girls, to be our assistant coaches. And what will happen with these 18 kids is we will split them into three groups. We'll do some introduction, and we'll do some stretches and get the whole group going. But then very quickly we'll split into three stations, and there'll be like a full swing station where there'll be six hitting mats, and kids will be learning all the fundamentals, grip, aim, stance, posture, and hitting full swings. And there'll be another putting station that one of the assistants is running. And typically our third station, we do chipping. We do a kind of a combination of chipping and rules and etiquette. So if they've got 15 minutes at that station, they'll have 7 or 8 minutes of chipping, 7 or 8 minutes of rules and etiquette, where we have a map of a golf course of three holes on a golf course, where we can teach everything about the parts of a golf course. They learn about a tee box, fairway, green, bunkers. Why is there a deer on our course? You know, is it better to ride the cart or walk?
Right.
And we also have did some flashcards to do some fun games about rules and etiquette, including, and it brings in some academic concepts too, you know, how to keep score. We talk about the loft of the club, and there's some scientific things there. So these kids are rotating through these three stations, and it's, you know, very fast paced. And then toward the end of the class, we might have time for a little game or contest, or at least a quick review. And then at the end of class, actually the beginning and end of class, although it's been complicated a little bit by COVID, of course, we do what golfers do at the beginning or at the end of a round, which is shake hands, introduce yourself at the beginning, mm-hmm. and at the end, shake hands and say, nice round. And so that's part of the sportsmanship of the game. And sometimes during COVID, we would just do a fist bump or a high five or just introduce
sure.
yourself with them. But the same concept. So we're in an hour. They're learning full swing. They're learning chipping. They're learning putting. They're learning rules and etiquette. They're learning some character development components. And these are like 6 week classes, and they'll build on their skills throughout the 6 weeks. And you know, do use different clubs and different swings as we go forward. And our last class is always like what we call the Golf Olympics, where we have a competition. It's like a drive, chip, and putt competition, and they'll then get their awards. Everyone gets a hat clip and a handout. And then, of course, some of the kids who win the Golf Olympics will get something special. But it's a really good, fast-paced, safe, and fun way to learn the game with very little pressure. And then kids can do – sometimes kids go through – we have these levels – where they can get mm-hmm. a yellow level hat clip and then advance to get an orange, red, blue, and black. So some kids go through four or five or even more sessions of after school, but those who really get serious about it can advance through our programs like summer camps, where we're on field golf courses. And those who have got more experience on golf courses will be in our fall and spring leagues that are competitive, or our summer tournaments. And again, we're still, even the summer tournaments, we brand ourselves as the introductory model. We're giving them their first competitive experience. But then I will talk to parents about some of the bigger events, like the Golf Association of Michigan events or tour or some other junior tours for the kids who really are ready for more advanced competition. Ours are all 9-hole tournaments on shorter courses. And we always encourage parents to caddy for the kids, and we provide a high school student who's like a scorer, rules official. So it's a great introduction to competition. So all of these things are among our programs, but the biggest ones are these after-school enrichment classes and our summer camps.
Yeah, and again, it's so important to have something in place, a really well put together program. And I like the fact that, again, because we know that golf is a very individual sport, and I like the fact that you do offer various levels depending on what they want, and they're able to go through it at a pace that they're comfortable with. So as they feel like, hey, you know, I want to learn a little bit more, I want to get a little bit more advanced with my game, you know, they can move on to that next level, and, you know, they're rewarded in the sense of you know, having that accomplishment. Something else that really caught my eye when I was looking, you know, earlier on the website is the fact, Dave, that you guys provide the equipment. This has been a big issue in golf for a lot of people. A lot of youngsters don't have access to equipment. So whatever you're using in your programs, you're providing that for them so they don't feel left out, so that they're able to do it. They're not having to bring in any of their own stuff or their own equipment. You're providing that for them, correct?
Correct. The after-school classes that each of our instructors comes with a huge black bag that has putters and irons and drivers, and we have three different sizes, orange, red, blue. We have right and left-handed clubs. It's all right there. And, of course, kids are not going to want to bring their clubs to school. But even
sure.
in summer camps, where kids do need a set of golf clubs for summer camp because they're going to be playing on the course, if a child does not have clubs, I provide a free loaner set for the week, no charge at all, because it's really an important thing for us to take away any of the barriers to access. And so a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't want to buy clubs because I'm not sure they're going to like it. So we just say, okay, clubs are free for the week, and they take them home every day, and they just return them, you know, on Friday afternoon. And then they can also then buy a brand new set from our website. And it's a great way to get kids exposed to it without having any of the pressure of having to go buy clubs. So we always provide the equipment.
Yeah. And again, that's a great, really opportunity, in this industry, because, Adam, I'm going to bring you back in now to talk about some of the other things, but this has been a real hurdle, I think, for a long time. And, you know, there's some programs out there outside of what you're doing that they can get very reasonably priced sets and things like that. But again, there's a lot of folks out there, especially during this day and age with costs and that being a little bit more prohibitive, if you will. We're seeing a lot of parents just saying, you know, hey, I don't know if I can really afford that. But you guys have sort of found a way through a variety of different channels of making it so that it's inclusive for everybody. So regardless of what your financial circumstances might be, if you're somebody that can't afford clubs, not to worry, we've got you covered. And that's extremely important for our industry to be able to really truly grow the game. It has to be accessible for everybody, regardless of what their position might be. So I think that's extremely important, and I want to make sure that I give credit where credit is due, because that's something that this industry has really needed to do a lot for a long time, and you guys at TGA are doing that. Adam, I want to reach out.
Let me interrupt for one second.
Sorry.
Another
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have TGA Sports Foundation, which is a 501c3, and people donate
right.
to that, and we do some fundraisers at our parent-child events. And we use those funds to provide scholarships for families who can't afford our programs. So anyone who qualifies for free or reduced lunch at school can attend our programs for half price. And I also do a whole lot of half price scholarships for summer camp. So we are trying to remove as many barriers as we can.
Yeah,
and
obviously
add that one point. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sure.
I was going to add to
okay.
one other point.
Please.
Just with that, Dave, is our relationship with Youth on Course as well. I thought maybe you should add to that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, yeah, every
Dave.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, anyone who signs up for any of our summer camps gets a free membership in Youth on Course, which is a pretty popular national program, and that allows kids to play golf at participating courses for $5 or less. So we work with Youth on
wow.
Course to provide that that membership for all of our summer campers.
Wow. Dave, where was this when we were growing up?
I know.
I had to sneak on a golf course when I was a kid because, you know, I couldn't afford the green fees at the time until I got a paper route. But anyways, I don't want to belabor a point, but this is something, you know, I'm a big advocate of really trying to move the needle for golf. Golf has you know, been a very obviously a unique game, something that a lot of folks would love to have played, but it was just out of reach. And, you know, certainly all of the major organizations involved are starting to, you know, help to move that needle, but we got a lot of work yet to do. And you guys certainly have put together something that is making some major headways. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that, Adam, with you, because this is really interesting. I remember very early on in the process, I interviewed Joshua Jacobs about TGA when things were really first starting up, and you know, pretty much Premier Sports was launched back in 03 and just covered a few area Los Angeles elementary schools, and was very I don't want to say bare bones, but very you know, small in its thing. Now you guys have gotten to a point where you know, you're reaching you know, over 825,000 kids and growing, and expecting to get above that million nationwide. You're across 77 markets, 23 states, including Washington, D.C., and even expanded up in Canada. Obviously, your long term is I'm assuming you want to get into all 50 states and certainly more of the Canadian market. Talk about that a little bit, what you see as the future expansion. Talk about the franchising a little bit for those that might be listening that say, hey, this is something I might want to get involved, as Dave did, regardless of what industry they may be in. And then also, is there thoughts of maybe even at some point, if not already, looking at maybe even in Europe, in some of the markets over there? Adam, go ahead and just sort of touch on some of the things I just mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, listen, again, as you talk about the growth and where we want to grow, I think the most important thing is, you know, conversation like this where people understand that we're growing the game, right? And so if you care about golf, and you talked about wishing to have this as a kid, I mean, all three of us, I think, feel the same way. If we truly believe that we're growing the game of golf, that's at its core. So if people want to be a part of that, that mission and that vision, that they should join us, right? They should join us. And then when they hear about the stories and when people like Dave get to talk about what they do and that they can actually make a living doing that, they don't have to be a PGA Tour pro or PGA pro, excuse
right.
me, and work at a golf course. You can actually meet them where they are, and you can impact kids at that beginning level, and really have this different journey and different impact on golf. And so if you care about growing the game, that's the story that we're out there preaching. And, you know, listen, the reason why, you know, Josh said, listen, I need you guys with me. Are you guys taking this on, this next step of the journey? Because PGA Junior Golf should be all over the country. And so being part of this youth franchise platform, we have the resources to really allow the TGA owners to do more than they ever could. You know, we have different technology resources, whether it's registration platforms, learning platforms, all types of technology and sourcing and merchandising backgrounds to allow us to really scale this and let more of these owners do more. And also, we always say we want more green time and less screen time. You know, we really take away a lot of the admin work. We make it very easy for these franchise owners to operate and really impact at the grassroots level. And so we want more. And so we're spending a lot of money really getting our story out there, our brand out there, and trying to attract more people that are interested in, if they're passionate about golf and they want to grow a game of golf, and they want to impact kids, and they want to make a living doing it, owning their own business, as Dave said. Like, he was a rock star of the Joy Free Pest, but he also said, I want to go it on my own, and this is what I want to do. If that's what people want to do, that's what TGA Junior Golf will allow them to do, and we just want more people to join us. And so that is how we will impact more and more kids across this country. I do think north of the border in Canada is a huge opportunity, and you know, we had a franchisee there. We're really looking to grow there. And listen, Europe certainly could be a big opportunity for us. I think we still have a lot more headway to make here domestically, but there's no question this game and what we do love about it is, and similar to soccer and, you know, one of the other brands that we're in, they are global sports, right? Tennis,
right.
Golf, soccer, global sports. So we have opportunities as we continue to build our infrastructure. If people love it, if people have taken our program and they go abroad, they want to go run this franchise abroad, we'd be all for it. So I think, you know, that's really the point. Now, I want to just go back to one other point that you more or less touched on with Dave, and that is that we are creating excellent golfers out of this program. And, you know, there's these pressures that we see parents put on their kids or even on themselves if they want their kids to be excellent or professionals. And, you know, it's hard when you've got somebody like Tiger Woods, and he's, you know, he's out there with his young son. And you're like, well, what is my son doing or daughter doing in order to compete and be at that level? And again, some of those best golfers that we're seeing and the ones that we're really growing, they got there on their own and they had a lot of fun doing it. So we're aligned with anybody. And I would tell you, many of our owners have golfers that they would put next to many of the elite up and coming golfers out there. but the way we did it was different. And what it does is, and we see this in not only golf, but soccer and tennis and the other sports that we're involved in, is if you give them that opportunity, a great coach, a great experience, they'll stay in the sport longer. We will have more players. We will have more activity in this game if we make it fun and we really focus on doing it from the bottom up.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And, you know, I think one of the issues with sort of the traditional junior programs that we've had in the past is exactly the point you made, is that it's there is so much pressure put on these youngsters from a very early age that a lot of them end up dropping out or get burnt out, whatever the case may be, because they're not having fun. I also, in addition to this program, host another one on Tuesday mornings, and we have had the pleasure, now Epson Tour, used to be the Symetra, but get to interview a lot of the winners. And one of the things that was really interesting a few years ago is that we had several winners in a row, first-time winners, that had never won a professional event before and had really been struggling. And they said the exact same thing that you said, Adam and Dave, as well touched on. And that is, once they sort of came to the realization that, you know, yeah, it's a game and you have to get out there and grind and you're competing against some of the other top players. But once they recognize that, you know what, I'm here to have fun as well, not just out here, it's not just a job, but I'm here to have fun as well. Yeah. I kid you not, and I'm not exaggerating, I think we had five in a row that came on, won their first event, and every one of them said the same thing, that when I just sort of let go of the pressure and just went out and had fun, I won the very next event, and they come on as winners on our program. So, and I want to, before we continue on, I want to read something out. I'm on the website right now, and I want to read this out because I think it's extremely important, goes to what we're talking about. And this is by, I'm going to give her name, Mary Thompson, who is a TGA customer. And she said, the instructors really tailored the program to young kids. There was a lot of instruction and technique, but they made it so fun. My daughter learned so much. Some kids' programs are either too fun, not enough learning, or too strict, not enough fun. This program struck the balance exactly right. You can't ask for a better testimonial than that. She's basically making the point that we're talking about right now, is you have to have both. You have to teach them, you know, as you guys talked about earlier, you got to teach them the fundamentals. You got to teach them about, you know, developing, you know, a good rapport while you're out in the golf course and you know, as we used to say, mind your P's and Q's, so to speak, but you do it in a professional way and act like, you know, young men and women. But you need to also make it so that it's fun and it's interesting so that they want to stay engaged. And that's something that's sometimes, you know, as well-intended as some other industries have tried to do, when you eliminate that fun and you make it too much performance-driven, I don't care who you are, even I'm sure Tiger had to have some fun in his game earlier on to get to where he did. And Adam, I want to stick with you for a second, and then Dave, I'm going to come back. There are a lot of different things. Dave touched on a number of different things. You obviously offer leagues, which is some friendly competition. You also have camps, and Adam, feel free when I'm done to expand on any of those. But you also offer some other ways to play golf with TGA. So maybe just touch on a few of the other programs that are being run a little bit, and then maybe some of the other programs that are also being offered, such as your youth golf clinics.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think, you know, everything it has a real intention, right? So we talk about, you know, during the school year, we really want to give them that educational piece, right? And so we're doing everything in that gymnasium. And those are those beginning classes. And then we always talk about the key to that is when we get them there, we've got them hooked, we want to transition them out of the classroom or out of the gym onto the course, right? And that's where we're really running camps and clinics. And we really want them to have a bit more of that next level golf experience. Bring them out. Teach them how to drive, teach them how to chip, teach them how to putt. And you're doing all those things as a buildup until we get them on the course. And so, you know, the business is not that complex in kind of those during the year stages. And then I think as Dave really attested to, a good almost 50%, 60% of our revenue comes from summer camps. And that's where these kids, they have a lot of options out there. There's a lot of things for them to decide to do. And we make it a priority that we're going to take them for weeks or multiple weeks or the whole summer to take them through golf camps, take them on the course for the first time, let them hold their bag, really let them walk around and really get an understanding of what's going on. And so I mean, I spent two full days, and believe me, Dave put me to work, watching all of his camps, watching all of his classes. And, I mean, we had a blast, but it was so fun watching these kids. And luckily, I got to see them a little bit towards the end. You know, so they had 4 or 5 days. But 4 or 5 days of a kid learning those core basics, learning the etiquette, and then some of them, their first time ever playing 3, 5, or 6 holes. And it was awesome watching them, you know, hit off the tee and watching their ball and just having some of those first experiences in golf. And so the business is not that complicated. You know, it's very good. It's very simple. But I do think the other piece is when we find those kids and when we really start to build, you know, we do want to take the best of class in terms of the students and the coaches, and we do take them into leagues. And a lot of our franchisees across the countries have been doing that. And again, I think our leagues are just, and you said it earlier, we do kind of focus in on that recreational golf. They're still competitive. You know, there's still some really, really talented people, but we want to make it fun. We want to make it convenient and to the parents and to the kids and give them just enough where they feel, you know, a little bit of the pressure of what it's like to actually be in a game or in a tournament or in a match, excuse me, but also, you know, but not so much that it's all about winning and that they feel like they feel exhausted or defeated that they didn't get to where they want to go. And so, you know, we really have that player pathway from the class to on course to then literally running and running a full camp or running a league and people going through that full experience. And think about the impact that we have. You know, the sport had grown 30% to your point you made earlier during the pandemic. Think
right.
about the impact we could have if we just keep doing this more and more across the country. It'll just be so good. And, you know, we parallel to a lot of the businesses that we have now. You think about soccer. We talk about it all the time. You know, all these things, they all connect in some way. You know, that first sport experience for most kids is you see that butterfly soccer, right? They're all just floating around the soccer ball. But if you teach them those skills, you get them a little bit educated on the game, and then you throw them into that game, they're going to be much better players. And that's that same philosophy carries through to golf. And we also run that same parallel philosophy to tennis. And we also give kids access to other sports. You know, we find baseball and golf tend to connect really, really well. We've seen a lot of the young golfers that we have are also in baseball, very similar mechanics, kind of the stick and ball sports. And so, you know, as long as we continue to feed them with those options and those life building skills and sport skills, we tend to grow in both them and ourselves, and we enjoy it.
Yeah, and you know, kudos to you and all involved for really what you're doing. You know, a lot of people have said that if we can just get golf in as one of the mainstream sports, I mean, even as big and as popular as through the tours and that, it's still not, as I mentioned earlier, it's still not as heavily integrated into, you know, our psyche, if you will, at the same level as other sports are. I mean, you go to most schools and, you know, there's baseball, basketball, you know, football, that sort of thing, many programs, but many of them still don't have any sort of a golf program or even at what you're talking about. And I know that you're obviously rapidly growing, and that's a goal I'm sure you guys have, is really to integrate that. And I think once we do, then golf is going to become very mainstream. And once it does that, I think you're going to see the accessibility even open up more. As more and more people get drawn to the game, I think you're going to see it even open the doors even wider throughout the whole industry, and that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. Dave, I mentioned I wanted to come back to you, and I kind of know the answer, but I want you to maybe expand as we get ready to wrap things up here shortly. You know, obviously you have specific goals as an owner and director of your chapter, but what do you want at the end of the day? What's a win for you?
Well, a win is kids smiling and enjoying the game. And one of the biggest wins that I have, and one of the most inspiring things about running this program, is I have now over 85 former students who are now assistant coaches. These are kids who started off, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old in our programs. And then once they get into high school and get on a high school boys or girls golf team, I hire them to be assistant coaches. And there's so many of them now because I've done this for a while. Some of them are JV players who might shoot 95. Some of them, like Lauren Temp, she's the state champion. She won the state Division III championship by 14 strokes. And she started off in our program as I think she was 6 or 7 at St. Peter Lutheran at an after-school class, and then she went to 4 or 5 or 6 summer camp sessions. She played in parent-child events with her dad. She played in our leagues and tournaments, just went through our entire pathway, and now she's only 15 years old, but she is an elite player who she got to the quarterfinals of the Michigan Women's Am at the age of 13. She's, you know, obviously one of the best high school players in the state, plays in AJJA events. So she is a mm-hmm. top-level player who really did start off in TGA. And then, again, some of our other assistant coaches are just passionate about the game, love working with kids, and maybe their game is not at Lauren's level, but they're still really good at teaching the fundamentals to elementary school kids. So it's great to be able to give so many young people their first job, and it's mm-hmm. a challenging job and a job that involves really giving back to the community. So that's been really gratifying. And again, though, the most important thing is just to see kids get that big smile on their face when they hit that ball in the air or hit that putt in the hole and really learn how to enjoy the game. And I always emphasize how it is such an incredible lifelong game. I mean, you can play from 4 years old till well into your hundreds. And
right.
And this summer have had a round with 4 generations in their family. Some of these kids might have played with a parent, a grandparent, and a great-grandparent. And it's really unusual. You know, I love tennis, too, and I play tennis recreationally for exercise. But, you know, if I play Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy in golf, you know, even though I'm like a 10 handicap, I'm going to tie them or beat them on one hole. I mean, at least one, you know, and that's a
yep.
pretty cool thing. Like, if I play Rafael Nadal in tennis, there's no way I'm going to get a single serve back. I'm going to lose every single point. And I can only play against about 1% of the world's population that's exactly my speed. I can play golf with 100% of the world's population and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great – you know, I never really – I have to remember that because I never really thought of that. You're exactly right because, you know, Tiger pars holes, you can par a hole and have some bragging rights. So, I mean, you're not going to do that in tennis or a lot of the other you're certainly not going to lay up as well as Michael Jordan did or some of the more current basketball stars as easily. But, yeah, you're right. It's a great point. Adam, as we get ready to wrap up, I want to come back to you and give you an opportunity for the listeners that may be tuning in and have sort of sparked an interest, not just necessarily to have their kids involved in the programs, but maybe taking it to another level. Maybe they're in a state that doesn't currently have this program and thinking, you know what, yeah, I've got some money, I've got some resources, and this is something I might be interested in. How can they become a franchisee, and what are some of the steps they need to do?
Yeah, so visit us at playtga.com. You can get to see the program. We have all of our franchise links and info there. And essentially, we give you all the basic information. We give you a prospectus. You reach out to us. We set up a call. We walk you through exactly what the business looks like, how it operates, what you potentially could be getting into. Then we walk you through the legal documentation of what it all looks like.
Sure.
Then we walk you through the financial discovery of this is what the investment looks like. It's a very low-cost investment to entry, very low barriers to entry. And it's also a mobile business. So in the franchise space, you have a lot of different opportunities. Specifically in golf space, there's brick and mortar or there's mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are mobile. So it's very low cost in terms of your item 7, what you need to put down to get into this business. And we say the open rate, how fast you can open. You can be open and up and running in a TGA franchise in less than 60 days. We help you through all those things. And we also have amazing owners that anybody can talk to. So we only are as good as our reputation and our personal currency. Our franchisees can vouch for how great this business is. And listen, it's not easy every single day. Dave can attest to it. But at the end, if you love what you do, it's phenomenal. So we give you all the access to all these great franchisees, these great stories. And if you join us, we're there every step of the way. We're there to make you successful. We have a franchise success coach that takes you all the way through. And we just want to grow the game, get more. In life, when you find something that you love so much personally, the one thing you want to mm-hmm. do is get more, is give that to more people. And that's really the way we feel about, you know, TGA is we love what we're doing. we love, I mean, Dave is amazing, and we have, you know, 20 other, 40 other owners that are just as amazing as Dave. And so we want more of those in our life to help impact more kids. And the TGA franchise, I think if you're passionate about golf or golf and tennis or just tennis, excuse me, I think this is just an amazing, amazing opportunity for those individuals. And we'd love for them to join us and be part of the family. And we're there to help you all the way.
Yeah, great, great way to end this. And just for the folks to know as well, if you go to playtga.com, you can get all the information that the guys are talking about here. We've been obviously focusing on golf because this is a golf show, but there are other sports as well that are available through the TGA programs. And, of course, TGA stands for Teach, Grow, and Achieve, which I think is something we can all do. And something else that's really that can be helpful as well for you listening and you want to find out if there's a program or a model in your area, they've got a locator, so you can just put in your zip code and you'll find out which specific programs are available in your area. So I suggest you do that if you're interested, if you've got some youngsters that might be interested in some of the programs that we've talked about. And I know we just sort of glossed over a lot of things, so go to playtga.com, get all of the information there. And if you're interested in maybe getting more involved and maybe looking into some of the franchising opportunities as well, that information is available, and I'm sure they'll be happy to, once you reach out, to have a conversation with you about how that comes about. But, guys, thank you very much for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it. I think you have opened the eyes of a lot of folks out there. I really applaud what you guys are doing, and keep up the great work, and you're welcome to come back anytime that you want to share some new things or some information going on at TGA. Dave and Adam, thank you for sharing your time with my audience tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
All right. All right. Much continued success, guys.
Thanks.
All right. Good night. All right. That was Adam Geisler and Dave Robinson with TGA Premier Sports and TGA Golf. Adam, of course, is one of the is the CEO of Youth Athletics United and TGA Premier Sports. And Dave Robinson, of course, is one of the owners of one of the chapters and directors at up in the Michigan area. So if you're going to be up in that area or you live up in that area, that might be something that you want to do. All right. As I mentioned, I'm going to have three guests tonight. Those were the first two, and I'm going to be joined by my next guest, who was actually rescheduled from last week, John Gowdy. He's going to be joining me. He's the National Programs Director of the On Course Foundation. He's also a Army veteran. We're going to talk to him in just a moment. But first, we're going to take a quick message break from Golf Tips Magazine. We'll be right back.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. I'm going to be joined here in just a moment by my very special guest to wrap up the end of the show, John Gowdy. He, as I mentioned, is the National Programs Director of the On Course Foundation. But let me tell you a little bit about his background before we get into our discussion this evening. He, while serving, as I mentioned, he was a veteran. While serving in the Army in Afghanistan, he was a victim of multiple gunshots through the chest and shoulder. As you can imagine, the pain was excruciating. His left leg was lost, and lifting his right arm was next to impossible. Many trips to the operating room replaced his fighting for freedom on the front lines. He's now, as I mentioned, the National Programs Director of the On Course Foundation, helping injured vets get in a better educational and physical headspace, just like the organization that helped him. We're going to talk about their vision and some of the other things as well, and how golf has sort of helped play a major role. So please welcome my very special guest this evening, John Gowdy. Good evening, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, Ted. How's it going?
I'm doing very well. Let me ask you first, and I'm hoping I got this right. It is Gowdy, correct?
Yes, sir. It is.
Okay. The reason I asked, I have a friend I used to go to school with that last name was spelt the same way, and I thought, you know, I'm sure that's how it was pronounced, but I thought I better just double check. I should have checked before, but you never know. Some people spell and their name's the same but pronounced differently, so I'm glad I got it right first go. So let's first talk a little bit about, before we get into the OnCourse Foundation and what's involved. Obviously, as I mentioned, and let me just say this first, thank you very much for your service to your country. And I know that it's something that you know, you're very proud of, and but obviously it came with some costs. Describe a little bit. Obviously, we cannot imagine, for those of us that have not gone through what you have, what you went through. We can just not imagine it. But there was a point, obviously, where you made a decision that I'm going to move forward. I'm going to do something, and we'll talk about how OnCourse stepped up. But talk a little bit about, obviously, you had to have moments throughout the early process when you first were wounded and coming back where you just really were down in the dumps, to say, not in a good headspace, as we put it in the intro. Talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind, first, before we get into OnCourse.
Of course. I got hurt in April 25th, 2012. It was actually my injury date. I woke up at Walter Reed, and kind of evaluating what was going on. I woke up about, May 1st, May 2nd, sometime in there. During that time, there was some hope that some things were going to happen, and then, things didn't work out. They came to me and they said that they were going to, they were basically going to amputate my left leg below the knee. And at the time, they were going to take my arm at the shoulder, but I could still move my fingers. So, just trying to put them in there in its place and try to sort it out. Somehow I found a way to try this experimental implant in my arm, and I got it approved, and went through the process. And they came in and put it in. So during that time, I had a lot of time. I don't think I got out of bed for about 4 months, so just laying in bed and a lot of TV, a lot of reflection. And then the team and what I did in the military was what I knew. My grandfather's retired Army. My stepdad was retired Army. And then being at group and then, being where I was at, I wasn't ready to leave. I started working on getting back to that, and kind of the proverbial carrot was, I was telling myself I was going to make it back to my team. I was going to go back on the next deployment. I just started setting small goals, just like you do in life, get out of bed one day, and you start making obtainable goals, and that starts building momentum and just positivity and outlook, I used the time in bed to start reflecting just on me, so I've got a better chance to know me. And, come December of 2012, I did a Tough Mudder down in Sarasota. I had about 90 guys come from 7th Group, my teammates and friends. And I competed down there, and I finished the entire 11.5-mile race with all the obstacles. And I signed back in the group. During that time, though, there was a lot of doubt, pain,
right,
injury, and I just had to keep telling myself I can do it. You have to set a goal. I had met all my other goals, and I wasn't going to let this beat me. I worked hard. I got back down to, my playing size. I had gained some weight when I was in the hospital, obviously not moving.
Sure, right.
By January 13, I signed back in the group, and by August, September of that year, I was down about 60 pounds, and I was back to my normal size, and I started jumping and training and doing stuff with the guys, and, I completed the things I was told I needed to do to make it back. And I found myself back in Afghanistan, 14, small trip 15, and then another full deployment in 16 with my prosthetic leg and my shoulder. That was teaching myself to left hand, left eye. You know, a lot of things had to change. But the mental part was such an important part to me because, you know, if you have any doubt in your abilities or yourself, it's going to just make it, you know, twice as hard. And there's one thing, you know, my dad was retired, Green Beret also with Fifth Group. You know, if you can't be a liability, you know what I mean?
Right.
So you have to stay in a positive spot for that. So I did those deployments and I was happy. You know, my body started feeling it now. I was a little over 40 at the time, at the end of 16. And I made a conscious decision just based on how I was feeling. You know, I'd gotten to go back 3 times. Now I get to leave on my own terms. The opportunity
right.
came where they offered me early retirement. That is where it got tough. Looking back, the rehab, the pain, and the drive to get back was the easy part. The hard part
right.
I was finding was when I decided to actually leave something that was more than just a job, but it was a life, that is where, you know, the stuff that you hear about, you know, the drinking, the depression,
yep.
All that stuff started coming in, and it was starting to affect, you know, my relationship with my wife. I had a new
sure.
son at the time. And at that point, probably at one of my lowest points, there was a guy from OnForce. And he was a mentor of mine when I came in the group, close friend. I called him and I was upset, obviously. You know, I'd been drinking and it was just a bad moment. He flew from up in the Northeast. He flew down to Florida where I was at. And he was at my house the next day. And he came down, you know, he started talking to me and, you know, he's listening and he's like, I've never seen you like this, you know, spent, you know, 10 years on a team, you know. And he's like, you should come try golf. And I said, I've never played in my life, you know, ever. Now, I was an athlete. You know, as a varsity letterman all 4 years in high school and in 3 sports, you know, football, wrestling, and baseball. I loved it. You know, I was really doubtful. I'd never played golf. So they talked me into going to this this clinic in Orlando, the 7-day. And it was an introduction to golf. And they had about, I don't know, about 20 guys from Europe, injured vets from Europe. And there were about 20 guys from the U.S. And a lot of these guys were already playing on the, you know, the Simpson Cup team or have or whatnot. And I can tell you, Ted, I was absolutely horrible.
join the club.
My whole life, you know, I made things easy by rationalizing it down to the lowest common denominator. You know, why can't I have been an athlete my entire life and been good at pretty much anything that I've tried? How can I not hit this white ball with a stick in a generally forward direction and no one's even throwing it at me? It's just sitting there. And,
right.
it bothered me, you know.
Well, you know what's interesting? Let me just interject real quick here. You know, you're exactly right, and let me say welcome to the club. You know, I'm a teaching professional. I've taught for nearly 30 years now. Obviously I do media, primarily now, but I've taught mainly corporate for a number of years. And, you know, it's interesting how many people who have come from a variety of different backgrounds that had never played the game before, maybe they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond, and say the same things as what you just said. You know, I just don't get it. You know, I was pretty athletic in school and so on and so forth. But I just can't see, you know, figure out why I can't master this game. Well, the truth of the matter is the best players in the world can't master this game. They're always improving and always learning. I think the interesting thing about golf is it presents a set of challenges like no other. I mean, most people can, you know, return a tennis serve, you know, if they're playing against somebody that's, you know, not you know, certainly in the professional leagues, but you know, most people can dribble a basketball, but golf is uniquely different because, again, the ball's not moving, but you know, you've got to hit with a small little club head, and you know, you're swinging at a pretty good clip. And I think what makes it unique for somebody like yourself is not only were you a varsity athlete, but you've had obviously extensive military training, and you're taught to overcome adversities. And I think by the sound of it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you looked at this as an adversity and saying to yourself, you know what, why can't I do this? And I'm going to let you follow up on that. But essentially, was that what you at some point said to yourself, why can't I do this, knowing what I know about myself, what I'm able to do, what I'm, you know, able to accomplish in so many other areas? Surely to God, this is one that I can at least, may not play on the PGA Tour, but I can maybe at least give it a good whack around the golf course. Give me your thoughts.
You're exactly right. It bothered me so bad that, you know, I hit the goal, you know, and I'm watching these other guys that are missing legs, missing arm. You know, even though my right arm is not that functional, but I'm watching guys with one arm, you know, one arm and only one leg, and they're out there and they're hitting, you know, the ball twice as far as I am and twice as straight, mm-hmm. you know. But it provided a unique challenge that I saw really fast that you not only had to be in the right spot physically, but you had to be in the right spot mentally to actually absorb you were trying to and what you were trying to execute, which goes into a lot of the things that we did in the military, you know. Smoothest, fast and fastest, you know what I mean? That whole thing, like, know it, you know, muscle memory, be in a routine, control your breathing, you know, understand yourself in the situation you're in to execute successfully, you know, and golf is no different, you know. What kind of lie do I have? What's the temperature doing? What's my mind like? What am I doing? You know, am I anxious? Am I kind of, you know, kind of out of it? You know what I mean? Are you not motivated?
Right.
Enough? So all that kind of goes into effect. And so they're sitting there and they're watching me. And I had some unique issues. Like, you know, I have my arm. One's not that functional. Mm-hmm. I can't get a drink with my right arm. And I'm a right-handed golfer. But I had, from the gunshot wounds, I have extensive nerve damage in my hands. So I really can't feel my hands either. So there's another thing.
Right.
You know, so they're constantly asleep. So I'm out there the first day. I'm frustrated. And the coach is there from the on-course. You know, they had a bunch of other coaches helping, you know, obviously with that number of people. And they called over. It was the guys out at the Marriott Grand Vista. They called over Larry Ziegler. That was there helping,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's there in Orlando. And they're like, we got the guy for you. Anger issues, can't hit the ball,
right.
strong as a house, you know, and he's like, perfect. So he comes up to me and he goes, we're playing Hawks Landing tomorrow. How many golf balls do you have? And I said, I don't have any. I said, I don't have nothing. I didn't even have, like, golf shoes at the time. Like, I went that night and bought, like, golf shoes. I mean, because I didn't know, you know.
Right.
He goes over and he goes, you're going to need all these, you know, you're going to need a lot of golf balls. So I show up and I don't know. I got like a box of balls, you know, a dozen balls. And the cheapest ones I could find because I know I'm going to lose them everywhere. And he goes, there's water all over this golf course. So he takes the den caddy and he fills the front of my rental bag full of balls from the range. And he goes, you're going to use every one of these. I said, you got to be kidding me. There's no way. And if you've ever played Hawks Landing, there's a lot of water, and it is very tight.
Right.
And needs to say, I did lose the majority of them, and I was defeated, and I was upset, you know. And he made it fun the whole time for me. Like, he was keeping me in it. We came back, and he's like, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go to the range. I want to do this. You know, I was really trying to – I wanted to grind on. I wanted to figure this out, like, in a day. You know, this can't be hard. And he goes, I want you to go upstairs and rest. And he's like, meet me down here at 6:30. So I do, you know, 6:30 the next morning. And he has an empty golf bag. And he takes all my clubs but a 9-iron through my putter. And he goes, okay, first off, I just want to be upfront and honest so we know what we're starting at. He was like, you're absolutely horrible and you have no business swinging anything longer than a 9-iron right now. You know, and he's joking. And it was helpful, right? So
right.
The next like 3-4 days, that's what I played off of. You know, I would hit 9-iron off tee shots. And, you know, they gave me a made-up handicap. They gave me like 28 or something, you know, just so I could go out and try to play with the guys, you know. Clinics in the morning, and it was around every afternoon. So when I got done with that time, we did a big final thing out at the Ritz-Carlton, and he gave me all my clubs. And I went out and I actually played a match play against a couple of guys from the UK and a wounded Marine, a U.S. guy for my teammate. And I had the greatest time, and I came back, and Mr. Simpson, John Simpson, he came up to me and he said, I'd like to invite you to a qualifier this year. And I go, I'm the worst guy out here. And they're like, well, yeah, but you've been playing golf for a week, and he said you finished 5 strokes behind the last place guy with a made-up handicap.
Mm-hmm.
And that started making me think a little bit, and I declined the opportunity, and I told him if he would have me back next year, and this was May of 17, and I said, if you'll let me come back next year, I said, I'll go home and get some clubs, and I'll start practicing, and I'll come back, and I'll shoot into a qualifier. And he goes, okay, deal. And that's where the journey really began. That's where a lot of things in my life started changing. The drinking, the going out, the you know, just all the bad stuff that you as people like myself go through and, you know, a lot of other veterans go through. And instead of going out on Friday or Saturday night and drinking, I put all my time into going to the range early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd get out there at 7 in the morning. And I would sit out there for hours, and then I would go play 9 holes, you know. And I did that every day. I had started going through the retirement process, but I didn't have to go into work, really, you know, just make my doctor's appointment going through retirement. But through that, I'm proud to say I had my last drink in December of 2017. I stopped drinking. I stopped, you know, just doing all that stuff. And I started realizing I can go out and practice and play, and I can be done by, you know, 1 p.m, 2 p.m, and I can spend the rest of the day with my family. And I feel better. that's where it starts.
No, that's fine. You know, I look back and, you know, listening to you, and I'm listening to your story, and I think of the gentleman who – you know, took you out on the golf course, a challenging, difficult golf course. I don't know if you realize this looking back now, but he was actually setting you up for success, because he obviously knew that who you were and your thought process, obviously as a soldier and somebody with military training, and obviously somebody, I mean, I don't know to what extent he knew everything, but he knew that by taking you out there, even though, you know, dumping all these golf balls on you, knowing that you were probably not going to come back with most of them, but knowing the drive and the intensity of the individual that you were, that you were going to get bitten by the bug and you're going to want to chase after this. And he was exactly right. The very next day, he took you down and you were out on the practice range. And one thing that I have found, I've had the pleasure of knowing a number of veterans over the years that have sort of followed your footsteps, taking up the game, and many of them felt the same way, you know, after their deployments. And I've known some individuals who were obviously a lot older than both you and I, but fought in the Second World War and, you know, had also come back with maybe some injuries or what have you. And, you know, they've taken up this game. And they found that what it did for them, as I imagine it has done for you, is it gave them, you know, when you're in the mindset that you were as a soldier, your challenge each and every day is to complete certain tasks. When that's taken away from you for whatever reason, it's very easy. You mentioned this earlier. You talked about how, you know, you didn't know really what to do. And, of course, automatic default is you go to certain vices and things that offer a certain level of comfort or distraction. But once you rekindle that through the help of this gentleman and obviously through Mr. Simpson with OnCourse, you've now repurposed John Gowdy, and you found a new purpose. Mm-hmm. And so many veterans, once they come to that realization, you were obviously very fortunate that you had the perseverance and the determination to do that, and now you're paying it back by working through the organization, and we're going to talk about that now. But this is something that I think is extremely important for any veterans that might be listening or any even current active military. You know, you're in sort of a box momentarily throughout your life and your career as a soldier, airman, or what have you, and you've got a specific task and duty to perform. Once that's been removed and that's no longer available for whatever reason, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, it's very difficult to figure, okay, what do I do now? And golf has been, and this is what I want you to talk, golf has been something, a respite for you, if you will. It's given you a new drive, a new purpose, and a new challenge. It's given you the opportunity to challenge yourself. And what I'm going to tell you right now, being around golf for as many years as I have, and I've been around for a long time, it is going to frustrate the heck out of you each and every day. But at the same time, there is no greater reward than when a well-struck golf shot or you sink that birdie putt or even your first hole in one. And it's going to frustrate the heck out of you on days, John, but then other days it's going to create a euphoria you couldn't even imagine. I want to talk about the OnCourse Foundation. You obviously got introduced to it. They helped you tremendously overcome some challenges that you were facing, and now you're working with them. How did you become in the position that you are with them, where you're now a national program director for that organization? How did that come about?
Leading into that, off that story, I was saying I showed up and I showed up the following year as a 10 handicap in 1 year. And I did extremely well. You know, and I spent all that time, every day I was texting the coaches and I was texting other guys in the foundation, and I was learning from them. When I actually got out, I moved to Orlando for a little bit, and then I just spent all my time there, and I actually attended the Golf Academy of Orlando and of America there in Orlando. So I started working on my business degree from there. And getting to play and learn golf and meet some really other great coaches and players. And I really engulfed myself in that, And then after making the team in 19, and I played at St. Andrews, I played extremely well, and things started changing. So when I got to that point, the opportunity arised, and I was able to this year. Mr. Simpson and then Sean Whitmore and those guys, they called me and asked me if I'd be interested. I had the background. I'm currently playing off of a 4. I went through their program that they offer. So they offer this program, Introduction to Golf, come to work clinics, start learning about the golf industry. You know what I mean? If you follow the program that they have set in place, and then they help people get employment in the golf industry. So, I worked a normal program management job for a while for a large defense contractor, while I was going through this. And then earlier this year, I was in a situation where I could actually retire again, focus on golf, and started working as a custom fitter at a shop over here, down here in Florida. I do custom club fittings, I do club repair, and now I get to work for OnCourse, following the program that they put in place and my passion for golf and just wanting to help others. And that's kind of where it started, based on just on my personality. And that's how I ended up. They asked me if I wanted to come on board. I'd work with Sean, here in the U.S. And we set up some regions, and I think the first 30 days. I'd already had two clinics put in, you know, in new areas. I was down in Texas, you know, other places here in Florida, you know, Alabama, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I really engulfed myself in it because why going out and hitting a great shot and playing well and just going through the processes, you know, of these, I found a really good dissatisfaction, and it put me in a happy place when I would see these guys come out, you know, new golfers come out or even experienced golfers, and the camaraderie that they had with each other, and the fact that they were comfortable, you know. So that's kind of just where it started, and then and the passion is still the same, you know, it's still golf, and I get to, like you said, return the opportunity, you know, give back.
Well, it's helping to redirect your efforts, your personal journey, if you will. And I just want to, for the folks that that aren't familiar with the OnCourse Foundation, just a little bit about the history. The OnCourse Foundation USA was officially launched back in 2013 as a charity solely for American service members and veterans. You've mentioned John Simpson a couple times. So I just want to let the folks know who he is. He is the founder, of course, and he visited the British Defence Medical Rehabilitation Centre at Headley Court in England back in June 2009 and was certainly moved by what he saw and heard. And after an ever-increasing number of patients were receiving treatment at the Headley Court, many of whom were amputees, he spoke to the patients about the opportunities in golf and related this to his own life experience. And so obviously, you know, I know from a teaching standpoint and a playing standpoint that golf certainly can be very, very therapeutic. And I think this is why we're starting to see so many of the veterans and even, you know, some service members. Your story is a little bit different. You didn't really get introduced to golf, certainly at an earlier age. But, you know, some maybe played before they enlisted in service. And stop temporarily because of, you know, injuries like you've sustained, but then found their way back. And, you know, many of the different programs out there, and OnCourse is one of them, has come out there through the foundation and really said, okay, this is a way that we can utilize golf and use it as a vessel to do two things, bring back some fun and enjoyment in the lives of people who certainly have earned it, but also show them that just because they may be currently faced with some challenges and may even be faced with those challenges moving forward, that their life doesn't suddenly come to a screeching halt. And I think that this is what they've done, and there's a lot of different things. Maybe you can touch on a few things. There's a lot of different golf events that are being offered through OnCourse Foundation, and also even some employment opportunities and services through there as well. And maybe you can touch on the Simpson Cup just a little bit as well.
Of course. So, Vaughn and I set up events, you know, anywhere from one day to 7 events all over the U.S. You know, like I mentioned earlier, we're expanding out to new areas and, you know, trying to bring the foundation, you know, to new members, you know, open it up to more guys and ladies and, you know, just grow. And through that, I mean, we do like our one day clinics, that we do, you know, it's come in the morning. You know, you get a 2-3 hour clinic with, the course pro and maybe an assistant or whatnot, you know, 10-15 guys, have some lunch, pair off, go play 18, you know, make it some type of, you know, match play, you know, fun, you know, make it fun for them. And that's just our basic one day. We like to use that like an introduction into the organization, get them signed in, you know, kind of draw them into it. Then we have our, our 3-day events. It's a little bit more in detail, a little bit more clinic, things like that. Then we have what we call like our work experience. And we've been blessed to have some really great sponsors in that and opportunities provided, you know, Charles Schwab, the PNC, you know, there in Orlando, but the Charles Schwab Challenge in down there in Dallas, KPMG. And these events is where we actually take the members, and we'll take a group of them that want to come, and we actually introduce them into that part of the game. You know, they can shadow the superintendents and the ground crew. You know, we'll have them work in the ranges. We'll have them come in and set up, work with the pro or the, you know, the event staff, you know, anything that they need. We've had guys caddying in pro-ams, you know, just to get them into the, you know, show them the different parts of the game and hope that maybe they, you know, it intrigues them enough, you know. And that's been extremely successful. We have the Patriots program, so if we can't get to a spot or we don't have events, members can apply, make contact with their local course or their PGA professional, and we'll actually pay for a number of lessons to get them going, you know, so that way when we do have events or they're ready to come to some event, you know, they're excited about coming. And that's you know, that's a big one. And then, of course, we still do the 7-day, and it was an honor, actually, because I got to run. My first large event was the 7-day event that we do in Orlando, and that was the very first event that I attended. So I got to run the first one, you know, the first event that I got to go to, and I really got in there, and I had a different part of the industry every day. You know, they did an hour or so with them. You know, it ranged from the Marriott upper management, you know, talking hospitality management, things like that, more of the administrative part. The pro shop, we had a demo day where Callaway came out and they set up all their tents and all their Trackmans and all their stuff. And we had all the bets out there and, you know, they got to see what those guys do, you know, on the manufacturing side. And fittings, we had a full day of fittings and you know, we had club fitters out there with all their stuff. And it was really great to see that, you know, and that's our big 7-day. You know, the guys go through the program. You had mentioned the Simpson Cup. The guys go through the program. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that they have to meet to qualify to get to a qualifier. You know, they have to attend at least one event. They have to, you know, they have to shoot a certain handicap. They have to, you know. So there's goals for them. You know, we talked mm-hmm. about goals. So they have goals, you know.
Right.
That proverbial standing out there, like, what do I need to do? and that's what got me, you know. I'm in there and, I watched the guys and the relationships I had, and I'm like, they come out and they got all this nice stuff. They're playing these great golf courses. They're playing a Ryder Cup format against, you know, the international guys. You know, on golf courses that the average person can't get on, you know. And I'm like, I want that. You know, I want to do that. And that's what started mm-hmm. that drive. You know? And so in hopes of doing that. But once they do that, then they get invited to a qualifier. They can sign up for it. We invite them to the qualifier. And we try to have, you know, 3 to 5, depending on how many applicants that we have, you know, that want to try to make it in. And they're held in various spots, you know, the Northeast, Southeast, you know, COVID kind of put a slowdown last year's qualifiers, obviously, you know, coming in. You know, we're hoping to add maybe a couple more this year. But the guys come in, they get a practice round, a pro-am, a sponsors day, and, you know, and then from there, it's a two-round qualifier, and it's all modified Stableford. So they're not playing each other. They're playing the course, and they're playing to their handicap. You know, we want to see the guy that can come in and shoot his number, you know. And they take the top, you know, 1, 2, 3 guys, depending on how many we're doing, and that's the team. You know, there's a founder's pick, and then you have a captain's pick that comes on. So that's how the Simpson Cup comes. That, you know, that's how we put our team together. And like I said, it's a Ryder Cup format. They take 13 guys from the U.S., you know, injured vets. They take 13 injured vets from the U.K. And we get to meet up and, you know, compete, you know, four ball and individual. So I was lucky enough. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, sorry. So I was lucky enough, my first time on the Simpson Cup, when I made the team in 19, I think I went in as a 7 my second year playing golf, and I made the team as a 7. And I actually got to go to I found myself standing on the tee box for my first practice round with this surly, you know, St. Andrews caddy on my birthday, you know, of all days. And I'm standing here at the home of golf, myself playing golf, and I'm standing at the home of golf getting ready to play a practice round, you know. And it was surreal, you know. And I don't think I stopped smiling. It's probably why I played so well, because I don't think I could have been in a bad mood. I didn't really care if I hit a good shot or bad shot. Just smiling.
Well, and that, you know, that's really what it's all about. You know, for those of us that have played, you know, and have been exposed to the game for a long time, that's the secret that we've known for a long time. And the rest of you who came a little bit later on obviously learned very quickly as well. And it's not always about... you know, obviously we all strive for that well-struck golf shot, but it's just the friendships, the camaraderie, the, you know, sort of the kibitzing, if you will, among your fellow teammates and players and, you know, foursomes, what have you. It's just fun. If you make it fun, and obviously there's a challenge to it, which adds to, just makes it that much sweeter. But really it's all about having fun. I want to mention something because I think this is uniquely important that I want to bring out about this. And obviously, since its inception, the OnCourse Foundation was obviously, and for notable reasons, was very proud to call the late Arnold Palmer, also known as the King, as a patron. And I want to read something out here on the site that I think is very important and part of the explains part of the reason why. You know, this wasn't just a ceremonial thing or something to say, hey, you know, we've got Arnold. He was a former yeoman in the Coast Guard. He always had time for others, as I'm sure anybody that's followed the game knows, and said the following on in April 2011. He met a small number of injured servicemen in Orlando through OnCourse, and he goes on to say he was profoundly moved and hugely impressed by their courage and determination facing what seems to be enormous adversity. Golf has been such a huge part of his life, and to see that his, you know, beloved game can be used as an integral tool in the rehab of soldiers from around the world fills him with a tremendous amount of pride, and I can tell you, coming from Arnold Palmer, that is sincere. He was deeply honored to be a patron of an organization that crosses all political and religious barriers in supporting those who have given so much to their respective countries at such high personal and emotional cost. And it was a genuine privilege to be able to support and highlight the growing number of courageous individuals who are too often forgotten. And, of course, we were sad to see Arnold pass September 25th of 2016. He was 87, but obviously had amassed. Tell us how, you know, now that you're more intricately involved with the organization, how that makes you feel and how the organization obviously has to be very proud of being able to call the King, Arnold Palmer, a patron of your organization. Somebody who obviously on some level could relate. As I said, he was involved with the Coast Guard, so he did have some service. But that obviously has to resonate a certain element of pride through your organization to know that he was felt and had such a fond memory and admiration of OnCourse.
I mean, it does. I mean, you know, golf, you know, golf is very similar, you know, in a lot of ways to, like I said, the military. You know, you have legacy, you have history. I don't know if you can get much more of a legacy in history than someone like, you know, Arnold Palmer had and the impact in golf that he, you know, and for John Simpson to come up with this idea and provide the platform and the opportunities for, you know, for us veterans are, you know, to come and, you know, figure out a path, you know, a potential path using this game. And a lot of the, you know, the etiquette and stuff is really preached because, you know, we all care about it. We all care about the game. We all care about on course, and we care about, you know, the reputation and the things that, you know, people should care about. You know, what's the legacy here? What are we doing? You know, and with that thought process, we have a lot of guys that just absolutely love the organization. You know, they do a lot of things on their own to help the organization. You know, the relationships that are they're formed not only with the vets, but then, you know, other, you know, past and current, you know, PGA players, you know, we get to be up around them. You know, you go to these events, you see them, you know, they'll remember your name, they talk to you. And it just goes to show that the type of people, you know, that plague the game of golf is second to none. You know, the places I've been and the people I've met are some of the best in the world, you know, and the best people I've ever met is through this game. You know, unfortunately, I wasn't involved enough to meet Arnold, but I've met a lot of other, you know, guys, you know, past and current players. And it's the same on both sides, you know. I've been blessed enough to play in the Pro-Am the last few years at Valspar. I've played at Sponsors things at the Players and the AM at the Players, you know, the last couple years. I got my first hole in one at the Players in 21. Playing in the Sponsors tournament out there, you know, I won the long drive and I actually got to meet, you know, Brad Faxon and Rory and those guys out there. Mm-hmm. But the legacy and the, and what it means, it's something that you want to cherish and you don't want to tarnish, you know? So the sportsmanship right. and the etiquette and the compassion of the game, it oversees the actual competition, you know, and it's right. never more prevalent when you're in the Simpson Cup and you're playing and you meet the people. My first Simpson Cup, half the European team was at the first event I ever went to. So they hadn't seen me in 2 years. And I showed up as a 7 playing great, you know, and they came up and was like giving me a hug and, man, it's great to see you. And I'm still close friends with all of them. You know, you see it, you know, perfect example this year at Baltusrol, you know, new guy on the European team. I'm playing him in singles. He gets a little sideways on the first hole and you can kind of see his eyes going everywhere, you know. And I look at him. And I conceded the hole and we pushed, you know what I mean? Or I didn't concede it, but I just,
right.
Hey, you want to take this to second, you know, hole two and we'll start over. You
right.
know, and he was like big smile, big sigh of relief, you know? And later that was actually replayed. So I got down and I was down 5 and I came back. We got into 16 and I was a little past him. I was a little outside of him, but I was going to give him the line. If I missed it, the match was over, you know, and I would have gave him the line. He looks at me and he goes, "You're down 2. He's like, "You just want to take this to 17 and see what happens." And I, you know, it wasn't warranted. It wasn't asked. It wasn't, he just looked at me and he goes, "Let's just take it to 17 and see what happens, you know?" And I won 17 and we had to play 18, you know, even though I had lost that match, him and I the competition was good. But we smiled and laughed most of the time. And it got competitive at the end. Don't get me wrong. You know,
right.
at not point during that match, did we ever do anything malicious? It was all smiles. It was all laughs. It was, you know, you see another veteran, you know, struggling with something, you want to help them, you know, you want to ask them, you know, "Hey, are you okay? You know, hey, breathe, you know, just hit a good shot." You know what I mean? Like you want to help them
right.
do that. And
well, and it
saw,
goes, yeah. And it goes, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish it.
No. I was just saying I saw a lot of that, you know, and that's what's special to me about it.
Yeah, and that's, you're right. That's exactly what it's all about. And I think that as, you know, those of us in golf and those of us that have served in military, which I had as well some years ago, And what I learned is the camaraderie crosses both groups, as you mentioned. You know, in the military, you obviously there's a certain camaraderie and a trust and that you have, and a certain respect that you develop for one another. And the same thing out in the golf course. And I think that's one of the things, too, that it's not just the challenge of the game, but I think that's one of the things that attracts a lot of current and former military to the game, is a mutual respect. And Arnold was very good at that in his day. Like, it didn't matter. I remember something very similar, a very quick story. Back, I believe it was in early U.S. Open that Jack Nicklaus got into, and Arnold, of course, was already established as the king. And Jack was a little bit, you know, chunky in those days, a little chunkier than what he is now. And, you know, the fans, everybody, Arnie's Armory was, you know, in the Arnold camp. And he got, Nicklaus got razzed a lot walking around the course. And at the end of the tournament, you know, Arnold put his arm around him and just said, you know, Jack, basically what he was doing was signaling the fans that, you know, he was welcoming Jack Nicklaus into the fold, if you will. And from that point on, you know, Nicklaus became a favorite as well. But it, again, it goes to that, just that kindness and whatnot and generosity on Arnold's part, because again, they were competitive. They were competitive all their lives, both on the course and off the course. But obviously they learned to still be gentlemen in every respect. I want to touch on a couple things because we're getting close to our time to end this, but a couple things. For those that want to donate, there's some great opportunities to the On Course Foundation, really a gift of any size, but just a couple things. It's not always just a straight donation. There's a method to their madness, and a couple of things just to give you an idea is for as little as $60 pays for an hour's instruction for one member. So if somebody wants to, you know, get some you know, on hands-on instruction, your donation can help them do that. There's also can pay for $115. You can pay for the attendance of one individual at an introductory golf and employment event. So there's other options there. I won't read them all that they can do. So it's not just strictly a straight donation. Of course, you can do that as well. But if you want to donate something specific, there's a number of different options available. And also something too, which really caught my eye as well when I was preparing, is you guys also have club donation program as well, which I think is great. Obviously, not everybody necessarily has a set of clubs and whatnot, so there's an opportunity for folks to, you know, to be able to donate there as well. And there's a whole process, On Course Foundation form, if you will, that you can fill out for that. But, you know, so there's a lot of great opportunities to participate in helping out some folks that certainly have done their duty to serve this nation in a variety of different capacities that are sort of, some cases, finding their way back to a road of recovery. And this is a great way to help them. So there's a lot of ways that you can donate. And also, you know, I don't know, there may be even some opportunities to volunteer at some of the events as well. That's something that you can certainly inquire about and look into as well. But, John, is there any final thoughts as we get ready to wrap up that you want to express? I'm going to give the website out here in just a moment, but anything else that you want to express about On Course and what some of the other things that they may quickly offer as well?
Yes. So first off, you're exactly right. You know, the On Course Foundation reaches out in many other ways than just getting some guys out playing golf. You know, they provide a platform, they provide the structure, they provide the learning tools for us to get back out. You know, and then as the guys move on, they teach you also a lot just from the coaches and the people that are involved. You know, you'll hear a lot of us talk. You know. You know, golf is a game of emotions. You can play at the same time, the same course, with the same equipment every day. And every day is different because it's based on your mind. You know, so we really try to preach the, you know, if you can't go out and enjoy yourself in something that's meant to be fun and control your emotions in a game that's supposed to be fun, how can you expect to control your emotions in life? You know, it's just a shot. It's it's much more than just going out and playing games, you know, a simple game. But the on-course, they are changing lives. You know, you follow the program, you get involved, it truly is a family. It's a very close-knit family. And the relationships that we have formed, you know, through the program, it does change lives. And I just want people to understand that, you know, it's just not a show up, play golf one day and never hear from us again. You know, we have a hiring manager that helps with job placement. So you can work one-on-one with a placement, you know, manager, tell them what you like. So, that's really kind of my final thoughts about that. You know, again, Ted, I appreciate the opportunity, you know, getting a chance to speak to you, and I've enjoyed it.
Well, I appreciate it. And just I'm going to add a few final quick thoughts here as well, and then I'll give out the website information for those that want to look into it further. You know, the OnCourse Foundation vision is really to use the game of golf as a vehicle for successful recovery. Their goal is for all members to achieve a positive outcome. For some, a positive outcome will arise merely through developing golf skills, building personal confidence, and sharing experiences with like-minded individuals. Their ultimate aim is to help their members secure work experience opportunities, and in some cases maybe leading to long-term meaningful careers, even in the golf industry, if that's something that they desire. So as you're right, it's not just about going out and playing the game of golf, but actually creating opportunities that maybe even getting involved in an industry that they may choose to do so. And that's what the OnCourse Foundation, part of what they're doing is to make that dream, if you will, realized for many of its members. And the website, as I mentioned, is OnCourseFoundationUSA.org. That's OnCourseFoundationUSA.org. All of the information is there, whether you want to do a straight donation, whether you want to donate to a specific thing, or if you're an organization or individual that maybe has some clubs that you want to donate as well, there's an opportunity to do that as well. But, John, I want to thank you for coming on the program tonight. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we were able to reconnect and get on here. And one other final note I want to ask you. I noticed in some of the notes, and I'm assuming that it's fairly up to date, do I understand correctly that you are in the Destin, Florida area?
Yes, I am. You are correct.
Okay. I am actually live in Panama City Beach, so I'm just down a stone's throw away from you. So the reason why I wanted to mention that is I will make a point, if you maybe after the show, if you want to email me your contact number or something, what we'll do is over the next several weeks, I will make a point of reaching out, and maybe I can take a jaunt if you're going to be available at some point down to Destin, and we can maybe grab some lunch or something together. And some other things I wanted to talk to you about as well. So we'll set that up sometime, hopefully over the next couple of weeks. But I want to thank you. You're also, I think, in one of the fishing capitals, as I recall as well. Destin has some great fishing. I don't know if you're a fisherman or not, but
I'm more of a scuba diver. I like going out diving. I like spear fishing. But most of my time is really, golf. I practice. I live on a golf course here, you know, out at Windswept Dunes. I work in Destin. I'm out at Sandestin Beach and Golf Resort out there. So that's pretty much where I spend most of my time outside of work. But I do, if I had other hobbies outside of it, I love diving. I love being around the water. I'm not opposed to going out and fishing. I just,
I just wondered. Well, I didn't realize you're actually even closer than I thought. If you're up at Windswept Dunes, I've played that course over the years a number of times, and that's a tough challenge. Let me tell you, it's a lot. At one point, I don't think it still is now, but at one point they bragged as one of the longest golf courses in the state of Florida. I think it was at that time it was pushing about 7,800 plus yards from the tip. So
right.
That's a beast.
Yes, 8,90 right now, and they're actually, I think they lost that title by about 40 yards, so I think they're going to slide a couple of tee boxes back.
Right, I'm sure. I'm sure they will. So maybe we'll get together since you're a little bit closer than I thought. But John, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show again. And again, for those that would maybe like to, maybe some veterans that are tuning into the show tonight that currently are not involved, maybe want to get involved with the OnCourse Foundation. Again, you can go to OnCourseFoundationUSA.org and get a chance to meet some great fellow military vets like John Gowdy here joining me on the program. You get a chance to meet him and many others as well and have some laughs and some good times together and maybe either tune up an existing golf game or maybe learn how to play the game for the very first time. But either way, you're going to be doing some great work with a wonderful organization. And if the king puts a stamp of approval on an organization, you know it's got to be good. So, John, again, thank you very much for joining me on Golf Talk Live. It's been a pleasure. You're welcome to come back anytime, and maybe we can get Mr. Simpson to come on as well in a future show, and we can talk about some other things as well. But thank you for joining me tonight. I appreciate it. And send me that information. I'll be in touch with you in the next couple of weeks.
I will. Thank you, Ted.
All right. I appreciate you. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was John Gowdy, National Programs Director for the OnCourse Foundation, and a great organization helping many of the veterans. And also I want to thank my earlier guests this week. As I mentioned, we didn't have a Coach's Corner tonight because I had these three guests coming on. Adam Geisler, co-founder and CEO of the Youth Athletes United and TGM Premier Sports, and as well as Dave Robinson, one of the owners and chapter directors of TGA Premier Sports and TGA Golf. And if you go to playtga.com, you'll find their website there if you're interested in some of the after-school programs or some of the summer camps, that sort of thing, or maybe even interested in becoming a franchisee with TGA Premier Sports. They've got some great opportunities there, so make sure you check them out. All right, next week we'll be back with another great show. Coach's Corner, of course, will be back, and also another great guest that I will interview on the second half, so hope you join me. God bless everybody, and have a great weekend. We'll see you next time here on Golf Talk Live.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel, and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.